For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
I would like to welcome everybody to the beginning of the fourth week of our eight-week practice commitment period, and kind of in the middle of it. There's a lot of excitement at the beginning, and then it's like a little tired. I just said something to the Shuso yesterday, like, yeah, it feels like a practice period. She goes, yeah. She's here all the time having teas. People are around here all the time. And it is the Shuso's birthday, which means we should sing happy birthday. Can we offer that?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Shuso. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That means a lot to me. And another year older and wiser.
One can only hope. We will be served tea and cake in the Zendo. Plus a vegan option of fruit. And
now it really feels like a birthday.
Yeah. We didn't have candles, you know. We didn't, as far as I can tell, maybe the Tenzo has something I don't know about. But so without further ado, the head student for our practice period, Paula, will share her perspectives on Zazen.
Thank you, Hoketsu.
And we probably should do introductions too. So I think what will happen is we'll start with the techno and go around the room.
I'm Paul.
Vinay.
Leo.
Kat.
Bob.
Ishan.
Nina.
Jerry.
Wade.
Adrian.
Jake.
Yana.
Hoketsu and Mike and Neozan.
And online,
Howard is also here.
And online, we have Mark, David, Chris, Carla, Joe, Douglas, Dennis, Ruben, Lou, Karen, Kevin, Allison, Dale, Keika Thor, Carrie, I should say, Serena, Nicholas, Sandra, Leo, Paul, and Nathan.
Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody online. I hope you're having a wonderful morning, as I am. So we're in the middle of our practice commitment period. And the teachers we have studied so far, the first few weeks, Joko Beck, now we're in the middle of Blanche Hartman, are pointing us to the practice of Zazen. Our Zen tradition points us to the practice of Zazen. So even though we take a period of time for focused study, for conversation, for discussion, all of that is wonderful, but underlying all of that, it's encouraging us to sit Zazen. Bodhidharma is considered the founder of our lineage of Zen Buddhism, or of Zen Buddhism, not necessarily our specific lineage. And he often said that Zen practice is beyond scripture. It's beyond words and letters. He encouraged us to actually experience what Zen actually is. So I'm going to try and touch on that a little bit today, even though I still am trying to figure out what it is myself, and we'll go from there. I wanted to start with a quote I actually accidentally found on the internet that I felt summed up the things I'm trying to touch upon today. This is by a man named, this quote is by a man named Jeff Kogan Seol, and he's a teacher with an organization called Full Moon Zen. It seems like they're only online. His quote is, "We must give up the pretense of being the center of the universe to experience ourselves centered in the universe." So I'll say that one more time, because sometimes they know it's hard to hear and these people write so beautifully, right? We must give up the pretense of being the center of the universe to experience ourselves centered in the universe. So one thing I wanted to look at today, in Zen there's a concept called two truths. But before we go into that a little bit more, Ehe Dogen, who is the founder of our lineage, who lived between 1200 and 1253 AD, brought this lineage from China to Japan, and then Shunryu Suzuki brought this lineage from Japan to us, gave us instructions on how to sit Zazen. So I want to just read a little bit of those instructions before I go on. So while you're in your chairs, try to get comfortable. Stack your spine a little bit. Ehe Dogen tells us, at your sitting place, spread out a thick mat and put a cushion on it. Sit either in the full lotus or half lotus position. In the full lotus position, first place your right foot on your left thigh, then your left foot on your right thigh. In the half lotus, simply place your left foot on your right thigh. Tie your robes loosely and arrange them neatly. Then place your right hand on your left leg and your left hand on your right palm, thumb tips lightly touching. Straighten your body and sit upright, leaning neither left nor right, neither forward nor backward. Align your ears with your shoulders and your nose with your navel. Rest the tip of your tongue against the front of the roof of your mouth with teeth and lips together both shut. Always keep your eyes open and breathe softly through your nose. So these are very practical instructions. And the instructions find us in a very still, almost noble posture. Almost a yogic exercise, a way of using the body completely, in a position that completely reveals the natural processes of the habitual mind. Once we enact this posture, there's no getting away from the habitual mind. This mind churns thoughts without fail. The mind fixes on the past or the future. The mind also reinforces our self-centered place in the universe. Something we found even after birth as a child, we feel that we're the center of this universe we're living in. Shunryu Suzuki had a saying that sitting Zazen and our practice as a whole is like putting a snake in a bamboo pole. So we see that metaphorically and personified in the Zazen posture. But the posture is a gateway to actually experiencing the Dharma, or Dharma meaning truth, Dharma meaning reality, Dharma meaning teachings, experiencing the truth of our reality. So getting back to the concept of the two truths, the relative and the absolute, sometimes called the conventional and the ultimate, or the conventional and universal. Relative is the Dharma position that is unique to you. Experiencing the world through our senses, as we go about this life, as Paula, as Robert, as Aishan, as Adrian, as Yana, as Jake. The absolute is an underlying truth or reality where the idea is that all things are one. In Zen practice, this oneness is marked by emptiness. Zazen is our practical means of exploring these two truths concurrently at the same time. Zazen is also our practice to experience the unification of these two truths. And Dogen refers to Zazen as practice realization, translated as a hyphenated word, because English basically doesn't speak to the experience of these two truths being unified. Practice realization is where the enlightenment and the awakening happens. But it's an experience. I have something here where I said, in my opinion, and I'm just going to forget that for now. I think Hogetsu told me to forget it. I felt it. No, I'm just kidding. I'll get back to it later during discussion. Okay. During our PCP, we have looked first closely at the teachings of Joko Beck. So Joko Beck guided us in some of the ways we could, another Zen saying, shine the light within. So you're basically taking the mind and turning it in on itself. She believed that this gives us an honest observation of our self-centered thought patterns. There is an inevitability for that to happen as we experience our relative truth, because we do have a position, we do have a perspective. Our senses enable us to start having a perspective. They're designed to do that. So this is all part of the process of Zazen, as Joko Beck pointed to that. Now, before we go further, I'm going to go back to Ehe's instructions for us. Once you have adjusted your posture, take a breath and exhale fully. Rock your body right and left and settle into steady, immovable sitting. So Hogetsu, prior to the practice commitment period, spent a few weeks focusing on the breath and how the breath anchors us in our present moment. So we've talked about that a little bit in practice. It anchors us in each present moment as each present moment happens. And they happen and they're gone. It happens and it's gone. It happens and it's gone. The breath is an apparatus that completely puts us in that process. So in order to be completely in the body and experience the relative, we connect to the breath. And I'm going to ask all of you to breathe with me a little bit here. So have a seat if you want. Put your hand in universal mudra. If not, if you're comfortable here, fine. Stack the spine, tuck the chin, lift the head, teeth closed, tongue at the roof of the mouth. Settle and relax. Turn your mind within. Inhale. Exhale. Let's try to breathe together. Inhale. Exhale. Pull the breath deeper. Inhale. Exhale. Again, inhale. Exhale. As you keep the rhythm of the inhale, exhale, we settle into this rhythm. Inhale, exhale. Like silt settling in a calm river. Exhale. We can start to look at the gap between the breath, where anything is possible. Inhale. Exhale. And maybe in that glimpse between the breath, can we see the Absolute? Blanche Hartman tells us, when we practice Zazen, all that exists is the movement of the breath. But we are aware of this movement. She warns us we should not be absent-minded. We shouldn't check out. But we should be aware of the movement. But to be aware of the movement does not mean to be aware of your small self, but rather of your universal nature or Buddha nature. And then Dogen instructs us, once we feel that bit of spaciousness, think of not thinking. Think of not thinking. And anticipating our response, not thinking, he says, what kind of thinking is that? And then anticipating our reaction, he tells us, beyond thinking. So Dogen instructs us, think of not thinking. Not thinking? What kind of thinking is that? Beyond thinking. So in our lineage, we call this Shinkantaza, and sometimes in Chinese Chan lineages, they translate it as silent illumination. In that beyond thinking, there are no longer necessarily two truths, but an experience of them operating as one. They're still there, but we can experience them operating as one. Blanche continues with her instruction about this. This kind of awareness is very important because we are usually so one-sided. Our usual understanding of life is dualistic. You and I, this and that, good and bad, right and wrong. But actually, these discriminations are themselves the awareness of the universal existence. Before I go on with her instructions, I would like us to call the universal existence them. Let's call the universal existence them. Blanche tells us, you means being aware of them in the form of you. I means to be aware of them in the form of I. You and I are just swinging doors. This kind of understanding is necessary. This should not even be called understanding. It's actually called the true experience of life through Zen practice. The true experience of life through Zen practice. Now, of course, none of this happens exactly the way I'm attempting to map it out. And we've all practiced enough that we realize that. It doesn't matter if you just sat the first time today, or if you've been sitting for years. Two truths as one is not linear in nature, but circular in a sense. And whether we sit for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or 50 minutes of Zazen, we experience both. As humans, there is a swinging door, as Blanche says, or a pivot point where practice realization can actually happen in a spaciousness that is beyond thinking. So Dogen continues to encourage us because he knows it's never the same every time we sit down. But Dogen tells us, you have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Do not pass your days and nights in vain. Form and substance are like the dew on the grass, the fortunes of life like a dart of lightning, emptying in an instant, vanished in a flash. And I will stop there and see what that has brought up for people. Thank you very much, everybody, for your kind attention. Hi, Leo.
Hi. Thank you, Shushal, for this wonderful talk. I really like the first definition of Zen about centering the universe. I'm like a cosmology buff, so putting Zen into perspective in the universe, it's very powerful for me and it resonates. And I really like that you use metaphors into your talk. And also kind of like the practical instructions of Zazen. That is all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Leo.
There's a question from Nicholas.
Hi, Nicholas.
Hi, Paula. How are you?
Fine.
Great talk. I, you know, one of the advantages of being around a long time is that you get to see how the practice changes people and how they grow, and it was just so great to hear you today and see that sort of transformation happening, because it's often very hard to see in oneself, but you can certainly see it in others pretty easily. And then I just can hope that it's happening for me. I love that you mentioned the self-centeredness piece, because I think that is really key to my liberation, being aware of that, letting go of that, transforming that, and just stepping into a greater sense of freedom, you know, when it's not all about me. And the two truths, of course, it's just crucial, and I've said a lot about that in the past, but so thank you very much.
Thank you, Nicholas. And I will say, like, when our Zendo was on Irving Park, and we would have sesshins, and, you know, even at that time, we had little breaks where we could go for a walk, and, you know, some people are very hardcore and they stay in silence and they take a walk without. But I always like to go to Starbucks and chat with whoever might be there. And oftentimes, my dear Nicholas was there. And I just want to point out the importance of this. There's not a lot of opportunity during Sesshin to necessarily have just a casual conversation. But Nicholas sharing his experience of practice with me, he also has practiced in the monasteries in California, and he has a very lengthy practice experience, also helped inform where I am sitting on this cushion today. So I just wanted to point out, Nicholas, that you are very much a part of my practice and my Dharma position in the present. And I'm truly grateful to you, and I'm so happy you're still here practicing with us as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And our conversations about Broadway.
Absolutely.
Hi, Jerry. Hi. Benji.
I was struck by it's not a linear question.
Can't hear her.
Oh, you need the mic. Thank you.
I think after you sit for a while and you realize, oh, I'm still doing that, or, oh, it's this again. At first it seems discouraging, but after a while you get used to it. It's like, oh yeah, we're here. And it reminds you that every time you sit down, it's like you're sitting down for the first time. You know, and in some sense, we're all beginners. What's that Suzuki Roshi book, Beginner's Mind? Yeah, it's like So I wonder if you could say more about the linear or nonlinearness of...
It'll travel to you.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I'm used to that a little bit. Thank you, Oketsu. So, yeah, two things. I think in many ways, if we practice long enough, like, you get a confidence in your practice, but it really depends on the conditions of your life, the variables of your life. And we all know in our life, things can change on a dime. You know, we always hope that doesn't happen. But you know what? It does happen. And when those conditions change, all of a sudden the confidence we had in our practice when we sit down on the cushion, it's right out the window. And we're right back where we were the first time we ever sat. So I think in that sense... It's an Asian concept of things being circular more than Western, because in Western culture we like, you know, point A to point B, point B to point C. I also want to say, you know, through my practice journey, you know, some things I didn't say in the Way Seeking Mind talk, because we all know, like, there's so many different things that happened as we journey through our lives, and especially if you're older, right? One of the first times I sat down with a Buddhist teacher was a Western guy who was in the Tibetan Kandampa lineage, and he had dropped out of Harvard to become a Tibetan monk, and he walked around Chicago in his full robes and everything, and the first time I saw him, I was like, oh! I'm like, I got to talk to that guy. I can't believe he's walking around as a Buddhist monk, because this was years ago in the 90s. Long story short, I started practicing with them for a little while. And I did practice discussion, which I didn't know was actually Doko-san, with him. And he was the first person who I ever got a real sense, I know this can be sad, but of real compassion. And this sounds simple, but my question to him was, and now, mind you, I'm in my 30s, I'm younger and sweeter, you know, I'm edgier now. But I'm like, you know, I don't understand. It's like I'm practicing, I'm following guidelines, I feel devoted to what I'm doing, and I feel like I'm getting somewhere with it, and I'm becoming a more evolved person, and then all of a sudden I slip back, and it's like I never practiced at all. And he was so attentive to me, and we were sitting at a table. He reached across, nowadays, you know, you probably wouldn't do that, but he touched my hand, looked right in my eyes. He goes, Paula, don't you understand? The evolution is circular. It's not a straight line. You're doing fine. It's circular. And you're always going to spin back to a place you were, and then you're going to spin back to a place that you've never gone before. And I started crying, because it was so kind and soft, and it made me realize how hard I was on myself. Okay. So it's still, I mean, it was amazing. So I hope that helps to clarify more of that. Jake.
This just came up. I hope I can speak loud enough that the mic can pick me up.
Can you guys hear him?
No. So much for that.
It's very, well, you know, it's probably why it works so well. It's very direct.
I just think there are a lot of examples in nature of that circular relationship. Instead of seeing time as a straight line, if you think about things on a geological scale, the Grand Canyon is eroded away and becomes the silt, and then the silt... like sediments out and becomes rock again. These things go around the water cycle. The water evaporates from the oceans and becomes the clouds, and the clouds become the rain, and the rain becomes the rivers, and the rivers run back to the ocean. And there's just so many examples of it on a geological scale, on an earth scale, on a celestial scale, that, you know, they're not unnatural. It's not unnatural at all to be circular. But we so often think of things in a linear fashion.
And it's hard too from you know, because when we're born, our parents need to educate us. And, you know, it's quite natural. If you're around children, being self-centered is natural. And children have to learn how to share. Some of them are naturally altruistic, but most aren't. And there's various degrees. You know, obviously no one's coming out of a cookie cutter. But I think by the time a child is two, you know, mine, no, I want. And if they don't get something, there's a fit. There's, you know, so we have that perspective. And that makes, like, going back to nature, we could realize that that is natural for us to have a perspective of us being in the center of things. For whatever reason, we don't really know why we exist, but that's there.
Yeah, I was going to be the next contestant. Thank you for a very thought-provoking talk, Shuso. Dogen says something in the Ehe Koroku that I have always actually had a problem with. One of the lines from one of his verses is he talks about the plum blossoms appear on the same branches as last year. And that does make it sound like it's a circle, but they're different blossoms, you know? And so to me that sounds too simplistic. I had a friend in grad school who described grad school as being like being on a record player. And I think like that I like that metaphor for how life unfolds as well. You start, you know, on the outside edge and, you know, the record goes around and you experience different things over the course of the record. And then the next time you come through, you're on a slightly different place, you know, and then you go around with the same kind of things unfolding. And that works for me. Because I've been thinking about last year, my husband Rob was out at Yellowstone for the spring and summer, and I really, really enjoyed seeing all the little baby buffaloes in March and May when I would go visit him. And this year, now that we're both going out, I was looking forward to seeing like all the new little baby buffaloes. But it also kind of made me realize that there will be some buffaloes that I don't know which ones who won't be there this year, and and it's true for all of us. We have to kind of relinquish things so that other people can have a chance, you know, whether it's our life or our jobs or our house. But then we get a chance with something else.
Or you don't know, like our Zen practice tells us, when you say we have to give other things a chance, at some point in that circular evolution, you know, evolution again implies a linear path, but we will be part of that other chance, you know? And is it in the Ehe Koroku where Dogen says, brings up about the mountains walking? Okay, because that image really struck me, because we think of mountains as not moving at all. And what you brought up, they move. They just move in a much slower timeline, but they definitely change and they definitely move. And that opened up my mind a lot to more spaciousness, like the concept of a mountain actually moving and walking. Hi, David.
Hi, Paula. First, happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Interesting. I always love birthdays because you're celebrating somebody being on the planet. You know, so thank you for being on our planet. Something you just said, though, struck me. And you said, you know, we will be. And I like to offer a proposition that we already are. We're just not aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember Aishin gave a talk about 2 months ago. We're talking about remembering where we are in the universe, that we are the universe, you know, everything. And there is no subject object, so to speak, you know, but we forget. And that's part of it. So I think what the circle is bringing us to remember. And that's what it is. So I would just offer that it's not what we will be, but we already are. We just have to have consciousness of it. And I'll leave it there.
Very, thank you, David. It's very true. Hard to wrap the mind around, but very true. And thank you for your kind words. And what that reminded me of when you said thank you for being on the planet, my parents are long gone, you guys, but I can't help but think about them on my birthday. And, you know, I'm so weird. Like, Adrienne's a good friend of mine. I'm so weird about my privacy, and I have this theory that people that are gone, because they do change and be someone else, but they survive or they last because you think about them. But I tend to push my parents out of my mind at times because I really like my privacy. I know that sounds very weird. But we have to thank my parents for me being here, because in my first 25 years, I did not want to be here, and I was mad about being here. And we have to thank them for giving me the ability to have faith. And I was raised strictly Catholic, but at the same time, they didn't care what I believed in. They just wanted me to believe. And I'm constantly grateful to them to give me the capacity to have faith. So shout out, Mom and Dad. I love you dearly. Now leave me alone. Okay. I'll go back. I don't know what time it is. It's probably about time. My inner sense is pretty good.
Is there
anything else?
We finish up our cake. Tea. And soon the Tenzo and Neo will come around and pick up our teacups. So maybe they'll do teacups first and then...
You know, the cake mantra. Yum, 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 yum.
Maybe I'll start recording now.
I'm glad we caught that. But I'm dumb.